The show is live and local. It is your local performance connection. And I'll just start off by saying that we expect to have Tommy Emmanuel on our show playing for us live in our studio tomorrow during the noon hour. I'm Kevin Kelly, and on today's show, we have a couple of singing sisters who are going to be performing at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield Saturday night in a program called It's All Relative. And later in the show, I'll be talking with Jeremy Swirling, who's music director of the Danville Symphony Orchestra, about their opening, a season opening concert this Saturday called Oh, What a Night, featuring some leading men of Broadway on that program. It's live and local. Hope you'll stay with us.
Last night I had the strangest dream I'd ever had before. I dreamed the world had all agreed to put an end to war. And the people in the streets below were dancing round and round. And the guns and swords and uniforms were lying on the ground. Last night I had the strangest dream I'd ever had before. I dreamed the world had all agreed to
What you just heard is a duet between two sisters. It's called Last Night I Had the Strangest Dream, and the sisters are Kirsten and Carrie Paladin, and they're going to be giving a show called It's All Relative at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois in Springfield on Saturday night at 8 o'clock, and they have an interesting connection to the UI Springfield and to our area in general, including I think the University of Illinois. Both of them are on the phone with me right now as they are sitting in Springfield. Thanks for joining us on Live and Local.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Kevin.
So let's see. That was Carrie who spoke first and then Kirsten second?
No, that was Kirsten who spoke first.
Oh, I mixed it up.
Well, we were doing it in order of the names and as you read them.
Oh, that was night. Well, and I was going in the order in which you spoke to me as we set up the phone call. Well, this is going to happen a lot during this conversation, I'm sure. So
probably so. We'll try not to finish each other's sentences too much.
Yeah, or if you feel like saying this is Carrie, this is Kirsten, whatever, or just
whatever.
Just confuse everyone. That's perfectly fine too.
Let's do it. They'll have to come to the show to see who is who.
Well, I'm looking at photos of both of you, and you're certainly not twins, but there's also clearly a resemblance there, so there could be some confusion on that end too. But what there can't be a lot of confusion about is the musical realms in which you have each chosen to work. Although obviously you're both singers,
right?
But Carrie, you've chosen the operatic path, and Kirsten, sort of the singer-songwritery path. And I'm guessing that those two paths represent aspects of your personality. You want to
very much so.
Talk about that a little bit.
By the way. I mean, Carrie, she definitely, I know, and I guess I can't really speak for her, but just knowing.
That's all right, go ahead.
You probably do often, don't you?
She speaks for me, and I do the same for her. It's funny, it's one of those things. She really took to the classical mode and really loved that, the drama and the kind of high fashion of it. I was trained classically at the University of Kansas, but spent my time doing singing more jazz and a little more musical theater. And my thing is really, I love the freedom of being able to write my own music. Carrie really, I think she likes the structure and the, she loves the classical composers, and obviously they inform every kind of music from the time they were conceived until now. But definitely, I mean, I really like the freedom. She's a good practicer. I like to be a little more, I'm a little more of a free spirit. So I think that definitely, we certainly, that shows in our choices of music careers to pursue. So,
Carrie, are these fair characterizations, or do you want to dispute any of this?
Oh, no, I will not dispute. I think that's, the thing is, we are, because there are two of us,
And we are very close, and I certainly agree with what she said. I do think that what I also enjoyed about opera was that it was the grandmother of all modern vocal music. And I love the idea that there was there were roots there from which you could use as a springboard to other kinds of music. And I think that's what's exciting about this show is that although we did grow up singing together, we did take divergent musical paths, but we sort of weave back and forth in between many, many genres. I should not say in between, but we sort of run the gamut. We're doing everything from ABBA to Gershwin to opera. Kirsten sings on a Copland aria with me, and I'm singing on the wonderful songs that she's written. And I think that says a lot about our training and where we came from in Lawrence, Kansas. We were trained from a very young age in a great music school. You know, the music in the schools in our hometown was so wonderful and gave us exposure to a lot of different kinds of music. So we could do that. And our parents, too, gave us many, many different options of music to listen to, from the Beatles to Leontine Price and Mirella Freni and Ethel Merman.
No, those are a couple of
Diamond, but
that's a contrast there for you.
But Ethel, man, did she have a set of pipes? And there's a great story about Kirsten. When she was about 6 years old, she was singing in a first grade program, and you know, the kids were going along, I think it was a history program about George Washington, the first president, and they're going along and they're singing, and the kids are singing in voices like this, and then they get to Kirsten and she goes, yeah. And everybody in the audience, I think the hair on their head stood up. So it's been a part of us for a long time. And, you know, listening to people like Ethel and having parents who really informed our, you know, diverse musical taste was the springboard from which we were able to jump.
So, Kirsten, if you are singing musical theater, if you still do any of that, or when you have done that, did you need amplification? Do you need amplification?
You know, no, I guess I didn't at the time. I'm trying to think.
No microphones back to, especially since the room was horrible acoustically. It was all carpet. It was one of those early 70s multi-purpose music rooms. So there wasn't a lot of...
No, I think talking about the musical theater.
Exactly.
They do use it now. But Kirsten, if I may jump in here, I don't think you need a microphone.
Well, it depends. Theater. Personally, I prefer using a microphone. It's Carrie, really, that doesn't need a microphone, quite frankly. She has quite a loud voice. I definitely can project without using a microphone. But I prefer being able to utilize the microphone a little bit more for effect and getting my voice a little softer and, I'm been singing in rock bands now, so I'm kind of, the microphone is my tool.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is true. I mean, for different genres of music, then you do. I mean, that does become a tool, becomes a characteristic of sound. I was just thinking, since you mentioned Ethel Merman, back in the days when nobody used microphones on the musical theater stage, and of course, opera singers don't use microphones on the musical stage, but yet now on musical theater, almost everybody uses them, and as a result, they end up getting a lot of singers with characteristically smaller voices, and musical theater sounds very different than it used to.
That is so true. This is Carrie talking. I think, how long do we have? Because we could go on a long time about that. I think what's great about what I'm really grateful for in Kirsten's and my training is that we were trained with a very, very, with mentors who valued being able to use the natural human voice in the healthiest and strongest way possible. So we were never relying on, Kirsten enjoys using a microphone, but if she didn't have to use one, she doesn't have to use one if she doesn't need to. You know, it's a choice. I do think that in some singers, and there are a lot of great people singing right now in musical theater, like Audra McDonald and Kristen Chenoweth, people who have healthy voices, but let's go back to it. They were trained as classical singers first and learned to value keeping your voice healthy. And I think, unfortunately, there's a trend in musical theater where that is not the case, and people are really not using their voices in a healthy way. So I think that's That's a whole other show. But this show is about, you know, where we came from and how we've really come to appreciate each other's music. And my sister is my favorite performer and songwriter. I'm her biggest fan.
It's very true. She is my biggest fan. It's very true. I even talk about that in the show. It's quite an honor to have somebody who's such a presence like Carrie to be such a, she's such a big support. And I think we all find sometimes it's hard as an artist to talk about your work and talk about yourself and to talk yourself up and to promote yourself. And boy, I really, it's awesome that I have my sister because she does that for me. I oftentimes do not even have to open my mouth. She just is, she's talking to everybody about my songs, and that just feels great, of course. I mean, that goes back to really not only, Carrie is a great support, but our parents were both such great support for us and, always said, hey, keep following your dream. You love this. This is what you guys were born to do. And they never said, what are you doing? Why do you want to do music? They saw how passionate we were about it, and they gave us everything they could to be able to pursue our dream. And that's a pretty amazing gift that our parents gave us, and continue to do so as well. I mean, even my dad, he's not on this plane anymore, but he continues to, obviously, I mean, we're here in Springfield because of him. And, we're just, and my mom is unfortunately she's in a nursing home right now, but she's still my biggest fan. I talk to her on the phone every couple of days and, she knows what's going on. And, and Carrie, that kind of support, I mean, that's what we grew up with. And so, it's so nice to have that from her too. And just, it means you can just keep on going when you have that kind of support, no matter how hard sometimes it might seem to continue. Oh gosh, I mean, I'm not making any money this time, but you just keep going, and that support is, so valuable. So,
I'm talking with Kirsten and Carrie Paladin, who are going to be performing at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield Saturday night at 8 o'clock, a program together called It's All Relative, and they do have a Springfield connection that they've touched on. We'll just mention briefly in a few minutes. But Kirsten, since you've been talking about having Carrie as a big fan and helping to promote you, why don't we let one of your songs speak for itself? This is called The Levee.
Yeah.
Do you wish to say anything about it other than...
Well,
letting
interestingly
it speak
enough,
for itself?
This is a song that was inspired by my dad. I wrote it about 3 months after he died, and I woke up in the morning, and the song was kind of just basically formed in my head, and it sounded like something that he would have said to me. The lyrics were totally something he would have said, and I had never written a song like this ever. I mean, this is my first foray into country music, and this sort of that sort of alt country sound, and it's definitely a very meaningful song to me. So,
it's The Levee by Kirsten Paladin, who
I wish I could
take
credit for it, but it's all her. It's a brilliant song.
Heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Won't you wake me? Never mind.
That song was called The Levee, sung by Kirsten Paladin. And who was performing with you there?
Actually, some fantastic musicians from Kansas City. On guitar, I have my good buddy, brother from another mother, Wade Williamson. On drums, my friend John Brzuk. And on bass, my friend Dave Gilmay, who actually helped me produce the record, and I'm playing a little guitar on that and some keyboard as well.
And so you said you're in Kansas City primarily, and Kirsten, Carrie, I'm getting guys mixed up.
That's all right. Yeah. The voices do sound alike. When we're sitting here, I'm like, that does sound like me.
Well, it would probably be easier if I were looking at you, but I'm just looking at pictures here on your press release. Carrie, where are you based currently?
I live now in McLean, Virginia, with my husband, Drake Story, who's a photographer, works for national magazines, and is actually drumming on this show here in Springfield, so it really is a family affair. But yes, I live in McLean, Virginia, which is right inside the Beltway. Been there for about 10 years, and it's a wonderful home base from which to springboard to New York or wherever music takes me. And when I'm not touring around or working on this fabulous show with Kirsten, I'm working with the Washington Performing Arts Society Concerts and Schools and Enriching Experiences for Seniors programs.
So since we've had a little bit of an introduction to your father, he was chair of Lincoln Studies at the University of Illinois Springfield for an early part of the first decade of this century.
That's right.
2001 to 2007, and you mentioned your mom has been a board member, actually, for the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, and along with other organizations, or stepmom.
Yes, stepmother Martine Paladin.
Yeah, so, and you indicated both, when you say your parents have been supportive, are you referencing your original mother or your stepmother, or both?
Both. What a gift to be able to come and bring this show to Springfield. It was through our father's connection with University of Illinois Springfield that we met Naomi Lynn, for whom his chair was named. It's a very long title, but it's the Naomi B. Lynn Distinguished Chair of Lincoln Studies, and we have become friends with Naomi and Bob Lynn. They have been so warm and welcoming to us. And through Naomi, Kirsten and I met Bob Vaughn, who is the executive director of the Sangamon Auditorium. Bob and I had a phone call, and before we knew it, we were bringing our show, It's All Relative, to Springfield. Springfield has really opened us, welcomed us with open arms, and Marty Paladin and her incredible friends here have just done everything they could to make us feel like we were welcome and that our show was welcome. We really could not ask for more.
So it's a little bit of an irony, I guess, that this is a homecoming, and yet it's also a debut.
It is. You're right. It's true. We are inaugurating a new series at University of Illinois Springfield called the Kitchen Sink Series. It's a really exciting use of their smaller theater, which is the studio theater. Seats a little bit more than 300 people, so it's a wonderful, intimate space in which to get to know artists and their music, and we're so honored to inaugurate the series. It's very exciting.
And who's going to be performing with the two of you on the show?
Well, on the show we have two fabulous Lawrence musicians from the University of Kansas. That's actually, Lawrence is our hometown, and that's where I live now, though I'm mostly based in Kansas City as far as performing. But two fabulous Lawrence musicians, Ellen Bodorf, who's a pianist who's played with Carrie for many years. She's just amazing. She teaches at the university. And then also a new addition to our roster of musicians, a guy, fabulous player named Ryan McCall, who is involved with the musical theater department at KU and actually, incidentally, is a musical theater, a writer in his own right.
Yes, a composer.
And composer. And then, of course, Drake Story, Carrie's husband, is going to be playing drums with us on the show.
So. Well, since you mentioned
it. And then we have a special guest. We have about 8 kids from the Westminster Presbyterian Choir who are going to be joining us on the last 2 or 3 songs of the show, and I can't tell you. And they're actually going to be singing on one of my songs, which I can't wait. I'm just so thrilled. And thank you so much to Dale Rogers, who is the choir director there, and he helped us organize this. And boy, we're just thrilled.
Oh, I don't know if we're going to be able to there's going to be a lump or two in the throat when we're singing.
There will not be a dry eye in the house.
Well, since you mentioned Ellen Bottorff, I believe she is the pianist for this next tune, and it's George Gershwin's Summertime with Carrie singing. And Carrie, by the way, is short for a nickname for Karen.
Correct, yeah.
So you will see it both ways, probably on your program. And I guess, Carrie, you just have been doing a show called George, Ira, and Friends.
That's correct.
Even as recently as Friday.
Yes, I performed it at the National Gallery in honor of the Chesterdale Collection. Chesterdale was the first president of the board of the National Gallery, and he and I, George and Ira, had a wonderful friendship. So the concert was done in honor of that exhibit last year, and then also at the Harmon Shakespeare Theater in D.C. And have been this show has sort of taken on a life of its own, and it's who doesn't love Gershwin? We cover all the gamuts. This particular or it runs the gamut of his music. But this particular arrangement of Summertime was originally written for 16-voice men's chorus and soloist, and I sang it many years ago with the Heartland Men's Chorus in Kansas City. And then Ellen and I took it and edited it down to two hands for the piano, and she's just magnificent. It's been a real special favorite of ours for many years.
Well, we're actually going to go out on this song, and it does show up in a medley in your show, It's All Relative.
Yes, it certainly does.
And the relatives in this case are Carrie and Kirsten Paladin, and it'll be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield Saturday night at 8 o'clock. They've both of us joined us here on Live and Local from Springfield as they have arrived last night, I think.
Correct.
And it's a great pleasure to talk to both of you and get to hear you sing.
So nice to talk to you, too.
Thank you, Kevin.
Have a great show.
Thank you so much. Hope to see you there.
And everybody listening. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Little baby, don't you cry.
Karen Paladin with pianist Ellen Bottorff in the George Gershwin Summertime, and that will be heard in a medley that Carrie will be performing with her sister Kirsten at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield Saturday night in their show called It's All Relative, and you heard them here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. We have support for our show today from Wesley Evening Food Pantry, providing groceries, health, education, and human services for area residents during the evening of the third Thursday of every month. Wesley Evening Food Pantry, a proud member of the Community Shares of Illinois, is a choice for payroll donations at work on the web at cs-il.org. And we have support today from the Danville Symphony Orchestra presenting Oh, What a Night, featuring Billboard hits from 1957 to 1969 with guests Ron Bohmer, Titus Burgess, and Bradley Dean this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at the Danville High School Auditorium. Ticket information is available at 443-5300. And the conductor of the Danville Symphony Orchestra is Jeremy Swirling, and he is with me on this portion of Live and Local. We'll be hearing from him in just a few minutes after this little teaser of music from Kurt Weill's Three Penny Opera. Ballad of Mac the Knife from the Three Penny Opera by Kurt Weill. This actually comes from an arrangement he made for wind instruments called the Three Penny Opera Suite, played by Chicago Pro Musica. And you can hear that song, among many others, from Broadway and elsewhere on Saturday's concert by the Danville Symphony Orchestra called Oh, What a Night, and it features some of Broadway's current leading men. With me on today's, on this portion of Live and Local, is the music director and conductor of the Danville Symphony Orchestra, Jeremy Swirling. Thanks for coming over.
Oh, great to be here, Kevin. Thank you.
So this is your season opener, yes?
It is our season opener, and it is going to be some kind of a night. I'm really excited about it. Orchestra's excited about it. We're selling lots of tickets, getting lots of new people into the symphony. Orchestras have been doing concerts like this for a while now, and people really love it. You know, people love this kind of music. I grew up with this kind of music. I guess you grew up with this kind of music. Lots of people have. And some of it is really well suited to orchestral arrangements. When you've got great arrangements and you've got great singers, it makes for a great concert, and this will be one.
And you have some pretty prominent singers from the world of Broadway. You want to talk about them a little bit?
Well, I don't have their bios to hand, but they're really veteran Broadway actors and singers. They've all worked on Broadway extensively. And what that means to us on the concert stage is that when they do these numbers, like when they're doing the Jersey Boys numbers or the Tom Jones numbers or the Beatles numbers, it means they bring more than what we affectionately call in the business stand and sing. They bring acting to the stage, and they bring the impressions to the stage and the body movements and so forth. So it's very, very entertaining, and these guys are the business. I mean, if you look them up on the web, you can hear what they do and see what they do, and they are really excellent.
Well, I did that, as a matter of fact, rather quickly, so I only have a little bit. But and some who are up on Broadway better than we probably both are, you may know some of these folks, but Ron Bohmer has been on Broadway and on the national tour as the Phantom in the Phantom of the Opera. That seems to be almost a requirement for certain kinds of leading men. If you've been in Phantom on Broadway, you're all right.
Yes.
And I guess Ron Bohmer's all right. Also, he's been in the Sunset Boulevard, the Scarlet Pimpernel, and a lot of other shows. And then Titus Burgess has been on Broadway, Guys and Dolls, The Little Mermaid, Jersey Boys, which you mentioned, Good Vibrations, a lot of regional theater, of course. On TV and 30 Rock. That's a show I still have not seen, but I keep hearing, you know, great things about it. Just haven't gotten around to it. And Bradley Dean has been in the role of Sir Galahad in Spamalot on Broadway. I guess this is his most recent biggie, and also on The Touring Company, and also Man of La Mancha, Jane Eyre, and he's even been on All My Children and Guiding Light. Now, that ought to bring a certain kind of audience
there you go.
To your concert on Saturday. Well, how do you find these guys? I mean, how did you manage to get them for the Danville Symphony?
Well, they come as a package out of a company in New York called Broadway Pops International. And this is an agency that has put a package of several different shows together specifically for symphony audiences. And so they solicit orchestras on a regular basis and send materials. And as music director, you sift through all these materials looking for programs and artists that you think will be attractive to the community. And this particular show has been touring all over the country and to rave reviews. I mean, they really do well, and our tickets are selling very fast as well.
Which is, of course, a very good thing for the Danville Symphony and why you do a program like this. You indicated these are songs that you and I have grown up with and a lot of other people have grown up with. But these are songs that cover quite a gamut. I'm just looking at your brochure here, which anybody can get hold of by writing to the Danville Symphony or going to your website or calling. And you got songs that were sung by the Four Seasons, Elvis Presley, Ray Charles, as well as songs from Broadway.
Indeed.
Is everything that's on the program part of this touring package, or did you add some things to it as well?
No, it's a complete package as it stands. There was no need to add anything to it. It's a full evening show. The orchestra does two or three numbers by itself, including a Beatles medley arranged by Jeff Tyzik, who's a really, really good arranger out there, and a conductor. And it's, you know, some popular music is well suited to an orchestra, and let's face it, some isn't. And these arrangements are all very, very good. They show off the orchestra as well as the singer. And our audience tells me on a regular basis, you know, we really like the artists, we like the guest artists, but we also come to hear the orchestra, and that's very, very important to our audience. They remind me of that on a regular basis, and so when we program music like this, we want to make sure that there's sufficient music for the orchestra to play by itself, and this one does. It's doing La Bamba by itself, and it does the Beatles medley by itself, and there are a couple of other pieces as well. So, yeah, it's one package, and it makes for a terrific evening.
Have you gotten shows from this particular organization before?
No, but I've had my eye on them, and they've got a number of other selections and for programs that they're pushing, and I expect we'll be using them again because they've been very, very good to deal with, very reasonable. It's not too expensive, although these programs can be expensive, and I'm sure that we'll be using them again.
Well, I kind of have wondered, you know, because I've sometimes looked for things like that myself, or at least I see advertisements in Symphony Magazine and the sort of thing that conductors and executive directors of orchestras subscribe to. And I've assumed that part of the appeal of getting a package like that is that while expensive, it's probably cheaper than if you had to rent every song by itself.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Or not.
And when you have to rent that many pieces, you know, popular music, let's face it, they're all between 3 and 4 minutes long because they were written for the radio back in the day. And you couldn't have something that was more than 3 or 4 minutes long on AM radio in that day. You still can't for popular music. And so, sure, I think there's about 20 numbers altogether on the program. And if you had to get those separately, it would just be a nightmare. And I've conducted my share of programs with numerous numbers from different sources, and it's you kind of wind up with this pile of scores on your stand, and you try to keep them going, and one's gone and you throw it aside and you pick up the next one and you hope you have them in order and you've picked up the right one. And yeah, it could be a nightmare. This show comes in two thick scores, one in the first act and one in the second act, and the Beatles medley in between, and it's beautifully arranged, the parts are good. And that's another great thing about a set product like this, is that it's all compiled nicely, and the orchestral charts, as we call them in the business, are clean and they're bowed, and so the orchestra can read them. And you know, sometimes when you rent parts from various different sources, you really get some things that are almost illegible. And I'm sure you've seen some conductor scores where all you really get is, you know, the chord charts and a melody line, and that's all it tells you. So if an orchestra member says, hey, what do I have in measure 82?
You have to say, I don't know.
I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine, but the chord is D minor 7 or whatever. So it can be an adventure.
Well, and this is a little bit of insider information, because these are the sort of things that audiences don't think about and shouldn't have to think about. But nonetheless, we think about them and we encounter them all the time. And sometimes players, I imagine, with the top pops orchestras, well, they probably still get some of this, but they have access to regularly high-quality parts. But if players seem a little irritated after rehearsal sometimes, you know, if you're a friend of some orchestra member and they come back from the rehearsal of the Danville Symphony after a particular pops concert and they're in a bad mood, it might be because they just read through a bunch of music where they couldn't actually read it.
Yeah, it's true. Some of the music that can come in on these rentals is absolutely disgraceful, the way it comes in. It'll come in a copy of a copy of a copy. That was written in pencil by hand, bowings that are marked out and crossed out, wrong notes that are written in, notes that are written in, repeats. Oh gosh, that's a big one. You know, are we doing this repeat? Are we not doing this repeat? Cuts is another problem. Different performances will have different cuts, and so the orchestral musicians will write things in, and then no librarian is there to clean them up afterwards. The advantage that the great pops orchestras have, like Boston and Cincinnati, is that they've got full-time librarians and staff, and so they can attend to these sorts of things. And so normally that kind of garbage doesn't get put in front of full-time professional orchestras.
Well, and a lot of the, like the Boston Pops, I know that they, I would be willing to bet that most of their, at least a large percentage of the arrangements that they play are ones that they commissioned, they own. And if you, the Danville Symphony, wanted to play a Boston Pops chart, the answer is no.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Those are
for that reason.
Those are very proprietary, and sure, they have their own arrangers on staff. And that's how they manage the quality, and it's very, very important, because professional musicians expect that, and it also makes for a better performance at the end of the day for the audience, because you get fewer mistakes, you get more confident playing, and let's face it, a happy orchestra is a better orchestra.
Yeah. Well, speaking of happy orchestras, here is the Boston Pops, led by John Williams, in one of the tunes you guys will be doing. I don't know if it's this arrangement or not, but you probably have. Let's see, La Bamba. Is this an instrumental tune for you? No,
it
it's
is.
The opening. It's the opening orchestral bit.
Yes.
Maybe it is Richard Heyman's arrangement. And here's a performance by the Boston Pops. William Clausen's La Bamba, an arrangement by Richard Heyman, played by the Boston Pops Orchestra, led by John Williams. And that is the music, although in a different arrangement, that will open the concert Saturday night by the Danville Symphony Orchestra at Danville High School at 7:30. Music director Jeremy Swirling is with me on the show here on Live and Local regarding this particular program. And as you said, some of the features will be orchestra only. There's that. There's the tune Tequila, which many people will know. What are some of the other orchestral bits you'll be doing?
It's those two and a 12-minute Beatle medley.
And Smokey Robinson?
Smokey Robinson, yeah. I think that's orchestra alone. That's a medley as well.
And otherwise, it's featuring the three Broadway guys, Bradley Dean, Rod Bomer, and Titus Burgess. I imagine pretty evenly divided among the three of them.
Yeah, they sing some things together. They sing some things solo. They do a little bit of a cappella work right before It's a Wonderful World, the introduction to It's a Wonderful World. They do an a cappella bit. And as I said before, they really work together to get the character and the impersonations well, and that's where they bring their acting to bear. And it's a lot of fun. They have a lot of fun. They go down into the audience and work the audience, as they say, and works out really well.
Have you met any of these guys before?
No, they're coming into Willard on Friday. I'll be picking them up and working with them a little bit, talking through the program on Friday night. Then we have the one rehearsal on Saturday and showtime.
Oh, that's amazing. One rehearsal for this whole production.
Yes, indeed.
Isn't that a little scary?
It is scary. It is scary. The first few times you do that sort of thing, it is scary. But it's what professional orchestras do, and it's the expectation. And the truth of the matter is that really good orchestras can do that because the style is well known, because the music itself is not that difficult, because the charts are well done and are legible, because the music gets sent out in advance. All of those things go together to help make it possible to do it in one rehearsal. And oftentimes if you have too much rehearsal, people get lazy, they start to feel like it's a waste of time. So sometimes one rehearsal really brings an element of intensity to the musician's attitude, because they know this is it, they got one shot at it, and let's make it work. And it also, it holds down expenses, which, let's face it, is a big part of the consideration in the orchestral world, all around. It's true for us in Danville as well. And that's a good segue to mention that the concert is being sponsored by Finkel Lewis Cattell Wealth Advisors at Raymond James in Danville, as well as Provena United Samaritans Medical Center. Without these corporate sponsorships, we couldn't afford to bring this quality of guest artist to Danville. And that's one of the really satisfying things about the job in Danville, is that I'm able to bring a high level of talent to a town that, let's face it, is it's a rural location surrounded by corn and soybeans, and it makes it possible for people to have high quality entertainment right there in town instead of having to come over to Cranard or over to Indianapolis or even further. And that's an important community service that the orchestra provides.
Let's hear another of the tunes that's on the program. Now, this one actually, I think, will be sung by Ron Bohmer on your program, but this is an instrumental arrangement by another of the big Pops orchestras, probably the other biggest one besides Boston right now, which is Cincinnati Pops, with the late Eric Kunzel conducting. And this is the tune that's known as Unchained Melody, which comes from the film that somehow neither of us has managed to see, Jeremy, called Ghost. So are you going to be researching that film so you can bring proper performance practice to bear to this performance?
I might do a little more research, but judging from the score, I don't think it's going to be terribly challenging. But, I think it'll be okay.
From the movie Ghost here on Live and Local. Called Unchained Melody from the film Ghost, music by Alex North, performed here by the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra, conducted by Eric Kunzel. And you'll actually hear a vocal rendition of that with Broadway star Ron Bohmer and the Danville Symphony Orchestra Saturday night at 7:30 at the Danville High School Auditorium, conducted by my guest on this portion of Live and Local, who is Jeremy Swirling, music director of the orchestra. Well, you've actually got me a little shaking over here just at the thought of putting together a whole program like that on one rehearsal. I just, as a fellow conductor, I wouldn't want to do it.
It's terrifying, yeah. Especially the first few times you do it. But what you come to realize is that these types of concerts, they lend themselves to that sort of thing. And after the first couple of times, you sort of get used to it. Of course, it really depends on the orchestra. You know, you have to know your musicians. And fortunately, around here, we do have the quality musicians that can handle that. And it's fortunate because it saves us a lot of money, and we still wind up with a really top-notch product, I think.
Well, and it really sounds like a lot of fun. There's an encore as well as all the tunes we've mentioned, and there's lots of other things that we haven't mentioned that are on the program. What did you say, 20-plus songs?
Yeah, it's about 20 pieces, and it moves along, and it's all sort of choreographed nicely, and it comes and goes in two halves. So I'm quite sure audience members will love it. Tickets are selling very fast. If folks are interested, they can phone the Danville Symphony at 443-5300. There will also be tickets available at the door. We are selling well, so I would encourage people who want to come over to take care of that now. And incidentally, in case you hadn't heard, the Danville High School has renamed the auditorium for Dick Van Dyke.
So I did see that.
That is now the Dick Van Dyke Auditorium. And in case listeners don't know, Dick and Jerry Van Dyke grew up in Danville.
And I did know that too. And if you want more information on the whole season, you can go to danvillesymphony.org and see the phone number there again in case you forget it between now and whenever you go to the telephone. Jeremy, thanks very much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
And best of luck with the concert opener. Sounds like a lot of fun. I want to mention to listeners some of the other events that you can go out and see and hear live in our listening area over the next couple of days. Tonight at the Castle Theater in Bloomington, it's Steve Earle and the Dukes and Duchesses. That's a concert starting at 7 o'clock. The Parkland Early Jazz Ensemble is at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 7 o'clock. Denise LaGrassa is at the Doubletree in Bloomington this evening at 5 o'clock. And classical guitarist Angelo Favis gives a recital at Kemp Recital Hall on the campus of Illinois State University in Normal. That's at 7:30 this evening, and Angelo Favis is on faculty there. The Kevin Lucas Orchestra, who were on this show recently, are playing at the Hilton Hotel in Springfield tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock. Richard Hagland gives the final of his series of lectures called Discover the Symphony Orchestra, this time focusing on the strings, Wednesday morning at 9:30 at the Alumni Center at ISU in Normal. That's 9:30 Wednesday morning. And finally, it's the Corn Desert Ramblers at Clark Bar in Champaign, Wednesday evening at 6:30. I thought their gig was on Tuesday, but that's what it says on my calendar here. Our show today is made possible with support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is at thecorkscrew.com.